This past Saturday, October 5th, hundreds of our neighbors met in Dover to demonstrate and marched to the Dover Air Force Base to protest the American-funded genocide in Palestine and to demand a total arms embargo now. Dover Air Force Base has been a main logistics hub for supplying munitions the IDF uses to blow up schools, destroy hospitals, bomb refugee tents, snipe starving mothers trying to get bags of flour, and massacre kids. One of the speakers rightly pointed out that we are, quote, in the belly of the beast. This allusion was used by Che Guevara to refer to North Americans who he said were lucky to be able to fight the struggle from within the imperial core, or what academics might refer to as the metropole. Regular listeners know I use this analogy myself in a satirical way, since the Highlands is the imperial core of the Delaware Way, homes to Mike Castle, Mike Brzezinski, Senator Chris Coons, AG Kathy Jennings. John Carney attends Catholic Mass here every week. So, yeah, we are in the belly of the beast here as well. It's also full of bankers and finance types, as I'm sure regular listeners know. So I wanted to dedicate this brief news item to them, my banker neighbors. This is from Reuters last week. More ratings cuts feared after Moody's downgrades Israel two notches by Stephen Schneier, October 1st, Jerusalem. A two-notch downgrade of Moody's Israel credit rating may not be the last, analysts say, as war on two fronts spurs state spending and raises fears that the economy may not recover as quickly as in past conflicts. The surprise move by Moody's on Friday to lower Israel's credit rating from Baa1 to Baa1 from A2 was criticized by government officials, but reflected uncertainty over Israel's economic prospects as conflicts rage. The ratings would likely be downgraded further, potentially by multiple notches, if the current heightened tensions with Hezbollah turned into a full-scale conflict, Moody's said. Bank Hapoalim economist said that the Baa1 debt rating is usually characterized by companies that are much less wealthy and developed than Israel. The downgrade kept Israel's rating three notches into the investment grade, down from six earlier this year. Comrades and friends, hello. This is your Highlands Bunker podcast. I'm Rob. Welcome to it. Tonight we have something a little special. I have a lot of folks on the line joining me to talk about their experiences on Saturday in Dover doing this demonstration. I want to first introduce Dunya Ramadan, who is an organizer and an activist and somebody I've worked with and who has actually published this week in the Delaware Call about this. And I just want to thank her for helping me organize this and get people on the line so I could get people's stories. So thanks so much for helping me do this.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Would you like to help introduce everyone so that we get a full docket of who's joined us?
Of course. So I'm actually going to pass the mic around, and we'll start with Carlisle. Would you like to go first?
Sure. I'm Dr. Carlisle Horrell, and I was at the rally representing healthcare workers for Palestine, and I was also one of the speakers.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for joining.
We also have Samahir.
Assalamu alaikum, everybody. My name is Samahir Omar. I am a Palestinian American. I have been with Dunya on a couple of protests. I was there in Wilmington. I live in Ocean City, but we drove up, me and my two daughters, we drove up to Wilmington to join the fight. And we've been with Dunya and Rehoboth when Biden's been down We've done also a protest here in Ocean City, Maryland, the very beginning of the genocide. And so yeah, happy to be here. Glad to meet you all.
So next we have we also have Sikna here with us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sikna, but I am a Lebanese American, and I am a public school teacher here in Delaware. This was my first time on the organizational side of a protest, and I'm really excited to be here.
And lastly, we have Wayne.
My name is Wayne. I'm a member of Delaware DSA, and I was very proud to attend this action and play a small part in organizing it.
Well, thank you for joining. I really appreciate it. I'm always really interested in how people sort of got hooked up with this group. I found out pretty early on that there was a group that was going to be dedicated to pro-Palestinian activism, but it's really grown over the 9 months or so that I've been involved with it. Maybe Carlisle, you wanna sort of start us off and let us know how you got hooked up with these folks and how long you've been hooked up with them.
Of course, I met this group. It's kind of just a random story. I've been going to protests in the Philadelphia area since around February. I'm also a photographer, so I go to these protests and I take pictures and I try to share with organizers and so they could use for social media or their websites or whatnot. And at one of these protests, I met one of the members of this group at that protest and was following them on Instagram. And but I live in Delaware, so I saw them posting about some actions that were happening in Delaware. I think it was one of the Occupy Biden ones. So I was like, it's like really close to me, so I'll just go check it out and maybe take some pics like I usually do. And yeah, that's how I met Donia and Zumana and the rest of the group. And ever since then, I've been part of the group. And that was in around, I think, like February or March this year.
Had you ever, I mean, you were taking photos, but had you ever done sort of activism, street protests or anything like that before as a participant?
Yeah, I have. So I went to medical school at George Washington in D.C.
Yeah.
And when I was there, I was there for one of the big women's marches, one of the big, I don't know if you remember a few years ago, after one of the school shootings, there was this March for Our Lives that was really big. So our med school class would kind of organize within our class and plan something to go out and participate in these like bigger marches that happen in DC kind of like all the time now. So I've done some of that in that sense. But in a way, this is still like kind of new to me as well. But that's, I've had like some experience going to some of these things in the past through my time in med school.
Oh yeah, I was at the March for Our Lives too. My wife and I and some friends took their. They had a son at that time who I guess was maybe in middle school, and I think we took him to his first demonstration. So yeah, I went down to that.
Yeah, I was down with a bunch of like other medical students from the area So at that one, we got all the medical schools in the area to participate, and we had some people from Georgetown, University of Maryland, Howard, and some of the physicians in that area. We all went together in like white coats, and we were down in like the Navy Yard area, with just like a whole bunch of people. There were so many people in DC that day.
Yeah, that was a big one. Cigna, where do you teach in Delaware? Do you mind saying, or what you teach, like what grade level?
Hi, so I'm going to keep where I teach confidential.
That's fair enough.
However, I teach 7th grade science.
Okay, cool. That's very cool. How did you get hooked up with these folks?
So I actually just met most of these folks at this protest since I was a chant leader. However, I have been involved in the groups this whole time, as well as the Instagram pages and such.
Oh, very cool. So had you been out with other groups protesting too?
Yes.
Okay, very cool, very cool. Wayne, is this new for you, or had you been sort of an old head and then got hooked up with this group?
I've always been the protesting type, but this is being part of organizing is completely new to me. It's been very exciting.
Excellent.
I started talking to people in this group back at the vigil that Delphi and ISD held in May. And since then, I've been working on it pretty hard, along with what I do with DSA.
Very cool. Samantha, let me ask, you're a Palestinian American?
I am.
Where is your family from?
My family is originally from the West Bank. It's a town near Ramallah. My sister, actually, and most of my mom's family, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles are still there with their children, like all my cousins. My sister lives there as well. She works with an NGO company there. She does a lot of like social work with them. So she's been to Gaza before this, this horrible genocide. So we're always in contact with them, and we just, my parents also travel back and forth, and we have the privilege of also being able to travel there. We were just there actually this past last year before everything happened. We went home for a wedding. My niece got married over there, so we were lucky enough to go and visit. And that was when during the time where they did the pilot program where any American Palestinian was able to go overseas and travel throughout Palestine freely and get a visa to go. As long as, and then they wouldn't ask about if they had a Palestinian, Hawiya, which is like a number, it's not really a passport. So they weren't allowed to ask if my kids, which they all do, have like a Palestinian number, which normally they wouldn't be able to go into any parts of like Jerusalem without special visas. So we were lucky enough to go to even travel directly to Tel Aviv airport, which we weren't able to do before. We would have to usually cross through Jordan into Palestine and go that way. And usually, because I'm an American, all my kids are American citizens, but because they have a Palestinian number, then I don't, I, we would have to go into separate buses on the bridge. Like my kids would have to go a separate way. So it was just a hassle. So we were lucky enough to go travel together to Tel Aviv and actually see our country this time, which is kind of sad because the people that actually live there are not able to do that. All the time. So, but it was a great trip, and unfortunately, all this happened right after we came back. But thankfully, my family's safe. But nobody's really okay. Everybody's kind of living through this trauma vicariously with everything that's going on. So it's been really tough year.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine. I have been in contact with, we had a guest in the studio about a month before October 7th of last year, an author and a poet, Maya Abu Al Hayat, and I've kept in touch with her a little bit. And I maybe you can explain it if your family has talked to you, but it's kind of hard for me to even imagine what it's like to sort of be locked up in the West Bank somewhere while this is happening. It must feel very helpless. I don't know what kind of conversations you've had with everybody trying to keep their spirit up, or just to keep living, I guess. I don't know if you could elaborate on that, or if you had any stories about that.
The West Bank and Gaza, they talk about them, but like they're separate like areas. They're all part of Palestine. And I think like what we've all been trying to kind of convey, even people that are, Palestinians inside the West Bank and even all across like the diaspora, like we are all connected. And even just like we feel like what we struggle, we feel the trauma with the people of Gaza like constantly. So talking to my sister, I mean, she feels kind of even, I guess we all feel helpless not to be able to help or do what we can. And I think even her NGOs, were shut down after all of everything just started. And they haven't really been able to do the work that they were meant to do to help them. So in that aspect, that's even like worse for her because, she's even so much closer, and not being able to help has been really hard. But when we traveled to the West Bank, we rented a car, and when you it's when you go into the West Bank area, like the GPS tells you, warning, you're not, you're in a dangerous area, which is funny because it feels more dangerous when you're crossing into the occupied territories, because everywhere you cross, there's checkpoints where you have armed soldiers at the checkpoints, where my kids have to like see that and be, terrified that they're going to be stopped for random reasons. And they would kind of be like a collective holding of your breath, thinking, are they going to stop us for some reason or not? So it was definitely an experience, and I think it was an eye-opening experience, because we kind of, when you're far away from that area, you kind of forget, and people there kind of feel like they've become accustomed to it, unfortunately, living like that. But when you come from America and you travel there, you're like, you can't fathom how people are living like that. But it's, I think this, what's happening now in Gaza, has kind of been also an awakening experience, where people are thinking like, we've been living under this occupation for this long. Why have we become so accustomed to it? This is not normal. We shouldn't be okay with this, Excuse me.
No problem. Thank you
Yeah.
for sharing that. I'm always it boggles my mind. Yeah, Signa. I guess I'll ask you a similar question, since the article I read at the beginning calls that a second front. I don't even at this point even kind of know what that is, but Lebanon is being invaded too. They're dealing with now a ground invasion and an aerial onslaught, something they haven't seen, at least not to this extent, in quite some time. Do you still have family in Lebanon, and how are they?
Yes, I do. They're kind of just trying to make it day by day. They've been posting videos of things that they've seen and things that have happened. Just the other day, they had the rest of the south. So my family's actually from the south of Lebanon, and they just evacuated the village where the rest of my family was living in. I got into contact with my cousin Mustafa about a week or so ago. He's in the mountains by Beirut, so he can see and hear everything that's happening. And he said that it's not safe no matter where you're displaced or where you're hiding.
Yeah, that's got to be incredibly scary times. So, thoughts certainly with them. I guess I'll ask Carlisle. As a professional person, as a medical doctor, I don't know. One of the things that has struck me in the last year is that there has been a sort of a great awakening amongst people. I think there was a and the it was very difficult, even in academic settings, even in professional settings, to have conversations about the fact that that Israel was a supremacist apartheid state, that it was a violent state, and some of these conversations weren't able to be had, and now they're starting to be able to be aired, at least, and the fight has sort of been joined by a lot of people. What's been your experience sort of in the professional world around these issues and sort of speaking out about them?
I totally agree. There's kind of been a growing shift in kind of professional spaces in academia, where at least they're allowing this discussion that should have been had for so long of what's actually been going down in Palestine. That said, it was initially, I think, so bad, and Zionists have so much control in those areas, that I think there's just still a lot of Zionism in those spaces.
Yeah, there's a lot of people grow up with a lot of stories and a lot of propaganda, and it's especially in that end of things, and it's very hard to get shaken out of.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these people are still in places of power too. So it's really difficult sometimes to get past that. And that's why you're still seeing some people being fired or threatening for being fired for speaking out or just showing up to a protest or anything like that. I mean, I've been lucky in that I'm kind of between like school and starting residency, so I'm not kind of affiliated with any health system at this moment. So it kind of frees me to kind of be more public in these kinds of spaces. But I do get why a lot of professionals are hesitant to do things like this because, yeah, they could lose their livelihood just immediately. And it's such a risk.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I tell people, I come from a corporate background, and I don't have a corporate boss anymore, and I really think it's incumbent upon people who are in a position where they can speak out with less, with much less sort of ramification or consequence. They need to start being brave, and doing it. Obviously, all you guys are doing it in public, which is freaking fantastic. Wayne, I'm interested to hear sort of your experience of Dover. How long you were there, what you did, how did you participate, and how'd you feel about it?
I think it went incredibly well. I was at a BLM protest in Dover back in 2020, which was a similar size. And I think I'm quite certain this is the largest protest that Dover has had since. And it was really incredible to have a large amount of the local Muslim community come out. The protest lasted for a couple hours, which also is pretty amazing. people who were there had a huge amount of energy, a lot of passion. There were kids there who were having a good time, you know. At least they felt good. You know, I think it was empowering for them to see that people do care about them also.
So, Dunya, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your experience organizing it. And also, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the piece that you co-wrote in the call, because it really lays out really in stark terms what is being fueled by these trips from Dover to Palestine and what's happening. So would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. And I just want to make a little correction. I actually wasn't a huge part of organizing this action. So many people came together to make this happen, a lot of them here. And it was really a really great collective effort. I couldn't even like single out who, just everyone collectively was organizing. And I was happy to help in any way, shape, or form. So just wanted to clarify that. When I went down to Dover, I was blown away by the numbers, especially for Delaware. You know, hundreds of people came out, and they weren't the hundreds of people from, you know, all over. They were like people with different faith backgrounds. There were people with different ethnicities and races, and people who came who have never met, you know, anyone who was like organizing with Delaware Actions for Palestine, and they just saw a flyer and they came out. People looking for community, looking for people who see like them, who are awake like them. You know, they were all out there. You could find them all at this action. And what was really, really prominent at this action as well was just how much trust was put in community members with each other in order to make this, you know, happen, in order to protect each other, considering the immense amounts of repression across this entire country against individuals and community members who are out protesting, you know, being very vocal in any way, shape, or form. There's immense political repression at this time. And so I just wanted to shout that out. There were, you know, how just seamless the community was in protecting each other, you know, and that's what community looks like. So I just also wanted to like point out the signage, people bringing out different signs. You could see some people carrying like the arms embargo now sign, no more death from Delaware. People understood that Delaware in particular, Delaware, this is the point, Delaware is very involved. And Delawareans are very involved in this genocide. It is coming from our back door. These weapons are being shipped from Delaware, okay? Not to mention the other businesses that actually have ties to the settler colony that are present in Delaware. A lot of small businesses. We are a corporate hub, you know? We also have so many AIPAC-bought politicians living in this state. Okay, we have the president of the United States, the biggest Zionist of all times, who will always be remembered as a genocider, living in this state. So to see that everyone there at this action understood how involved the state was, and wanted to communicate that to, I would say, Delaware is a very sleepy state. People don't like discomfort in any way, shape, or form in this state. It's not something people are okay with. As someone, as a Delawarean who's grown up here, you know, for quite some, like my entire life, And this was a big, I would say it shook the state a bit, shook Dover a bit. You know, people were confused. Like, people would be going by, and we didn't think that we'd get such supportive reactions. Yeah, we got some negative reactions here and there. That's everywhere. But to have people beeping in support in Dover, that tells you something too. That tells you something too. Anyway, I'm sorry I rambled there, but I wanted to just lay that all out there. I want to talk a little bit also about the what you published on the Delaware Call. We wanted to make sure that it was clear how Delaware was involved. That's actually one of the main points journalists and other, I would say, adversaries in general love to question me and others about how Delaware is involved. They always say, why are we talking about Palestine? Why are we talking about Lebanon? What does this have to do with us? Especially Delawarean like politicians. Some of them ask me that. Like, that's insane to me that you don't have the proper education to understand how our state is directly involved and has, you know, like, is intertwined with the global actions of the world. We are not an isolated sphere. That's why in this article, what you published, I wanted, along, you know, the team to make it clear that Delaware is very much involved, and it's not the first time that they're hearing about it. It's been stated over and over again after the state of the state disruptions in, I believe, March. Protesters made it very clear to Governor Carney that he doesn't care about Palestinians. He never even lowered the flag for Palestinians, and that was made very clear. Okay, everyone made sure to voice that they knew that one of the first weapon shipments was coming out of Dover Air Force Base, and that was reported by Delaware Online. I just want to put that out there. That was reported by Delaware Online, and the sources are all there in the article. And then you have some news agencies that were trying to undermine the action's credibility on Saturday by stating that they couldn't really confirm that shipments were coming out of Dover, even though, and because they might, you know, not be able to utilize statistics and or any reporting from a news journal like Delaware Online, for instance, when all of this data is public. It's public data on flight radar. You can see how many shipments are coming out of the Dover Air Force Base to the Nevatim base in Israel. You know, in just August alone, as I had said, 17, okay, civilian and cargo flights were coming out of Dover Air Force Base, and they were definitely most likely carrying the same weapons we see being used in Lebanon, F-15, the F-15s, the F-15 jets, the 120 mortars, it's just endless, you know, like, we're not, as the public, we are not ignorant. We are very awake. We understand that these shipments are coming out of this base, and it's very public, and the data's there. And we made that clear in this article. And Haaretz reported on these shipments from the Dover Air Force Base. International news journals have reported this. And I just don't understand. The only reason people in this state are avoiding this big in-your-face involvement right here is solely because they want to remain ignorant and push aside, look away from the genocide that we're all a part of.
I was surprised to learn that this was still, people were still sort of ignorant of this, because, yeah. I mean, obviously this is something I follow, but you're exactly right. If you rewind this show 1 year, mm-hmm. When they published that, I went off on like a wild rant Because the reason it was published and the reporter who published that, I'll say her name, Isabel Hughes, propagandist extraordinaire. It was written in the tone of, you know, some of you, actually all of you, are too young to have experienced it. But, you know, after 9/11, there was a tone in the country of, we're going to go do this and it's so good. And so the tone of that article that you're referring to was exactly the same. It was like, shouldn't we be so proud that we're shipping these death machines to go support this colonial cause, because people don't understand what Gaza is or what the conditions there were. They don't understand the history of the place, and they don't understand that there's going to be armed struggle against apartheid and against oppression and against really the kind of violence that is looking to ethnically cleanse that area of Arabs, and that's it. So yeah, I you bringing that up has now recharged me about thinking about when I kind of went off on that article. But yeah, I do. One thing I will say, and this goes to everybody's efforts about bringing more awareness and kind of shocking people out of their shell. Delaware is a very how do I want to put this? Sort of weak-minded, lazy, tired sort of people from a civic engagement perspective. And people on this call probably, I know I do it, do other sort of political organizing and advocacy and activism, and it's so hard to get people to think about this stuff because it's very easy to ignore it. And that was kind of my next question. You sort of touched on what kind of reception you got just from passerbys and the regular sort of people around Dover. I wonder if anybody had any particular experiences, good or bad, with people just sort of coming up, either showing solidarity or just being ignorant. Like, how was the vibe down there with the civilians?
I'd say it was pretty exciting. So ironically enough, one of my coworkers lives down in Dover, and he drove by the protests, and he said, oh, he texted me. He said, oh, wow, you guys look amazing out there. So he ended up parking his car at the RVs and getting out. He took his one-year-old son out so that his son could see what we were doing. And then after, he let me know that it was amazing, and next time he wants to partake in like organizing and such.
I love to hear it. I should give my story too to all of you. I was hooked up with this group, many months ago, because when there was snow on the ground, we were going to go wake up Chris Coons at the senator's house. And I live near there. So I wanted everybody to meet here and have a place inside where they could, where they could rally, they could use the bathroom, they could have a sort of a communication spot. And I was so incredibly excited for the fact that it grew very quickly, and everybody was totally dedicated to the cause. And I had never seen something quite that that vibrant, if I could say it, like in Delaware, that exciting. So yeah, I'm very, very happy to hear that. Samantha, I have a particular question for you, and I'm not sure how to ask it, but because I do spend a lot of time down in that part of the Delmarva Peninsula, and you've lived there a long time. What has been your experience with, like, the people in your social circles, or the people that, I mean, obviously you see a lot of tourists coming through. I find Ocean City sort of a strange place, and I guess most of that has to do with the fact that it's a large sort of resort town that has this huge sort of summer influx of tourists, and then maybe festivals throughout some of the fall and winter, but generally a pretty sleepy town otherwise. What's it like there? Do people know that you have Palestinian roots? Do people sort of understand what's happening with you, or is it just like they're just so oblivious to what's happening?
So When we moved, like I said, to this area a long time ago, I was 8 years old when we moved to the Eastern Shore to here. There was literally, I don't think, any Muslims in the area that I knew of back then. And our community has definitely grown. I think most of them are family, but there's a this community has definitely grown over the years. And it's come a long way, but there's, like Dunya said, Delaware and Maryland, especially this part of the Eastern Shore, are, you have very similar people in this area. I think they don't get outside, they don't get a chance or an inkling to kind of go out of this area and meet other people and other cultures. So I think it's kind of closed off in that aspect. I feel like people in this area kind of live like in a bubble, and in a comfortable bubble that they don't want to kind of venture out of. And so when you kind of bring attention to other cultures and other things outside of the US that it's happening, they kind of approach it with the feeling of it's not about us, it has nothing to do with us, we don't want to be bothered with it. I do work in the healthcare field, so, and I'm blessed to be in that field because I feel like it gives me a chance to introduce people to my culture, to my religion. I do wear the hijab and sort of my daughter, and so we have a lot of people kind of approaching us and asking us, "Where are you from?" It's always the assumption that you're not from here because you're wearing a hijab. So usually I always kid by saying, "Oh, I'm from Ocean City," but they're like, "Where are you from?" Like, "Where are you really from?" I'm like, and then when I used to say I'm from Palestine, they were like, "Where's that?" Like, nobody would even know where Palestine is, and they were like, "Oh, you mean Israel?" I'm like, "No, I mean Palestine." So it's people have come a long way. I think, like I said, this there's something you I meet all kinds of people that are understanding, and they're they are cultured, and they kind of have researched and found out what's really going on there. They understand what Palestine is. People now, most of them, when I say Palestine, they know where I'm talking about. And then there's always ignorance. We Like I said, when we did a protest in Ocean City, that we it was the very beginning. It was in January, and it nothing like that has ever been done here. Protests, raising the Palestinian flag on the boardwalk was it has never happened. Even our kids, they've had like graduation processions in the past couple of years because of COVID, where they had the cars going on like a parade on the boardwalk. And all of our kids, all the Palestinian families here, had their kids raise the Palestinian flag with their kids on graduation day. So, that's, and then people look at that like, this is America. Why are you raising that flag? Which is kind of mind-boggling. Like, why is the Palestinian flag so offensive to people? Like, raising any other flag in this country is okay. Ukraine, Mexico, Italian, Irish. There's a lot of Irish. We have like, at St. Patrick's Day parade every year, but that's okay. But as any Palestinian flag that's risen is like seen as offensive. So, I mean, this area has a lot to still learn, and hopefully, I take every opportunity with people that I meet as a chance to educate people. And one by one, if I educate one person on Palestine or my culture or my religion, I feel like it's a good day that day. So,
How old are your children?
I have a my oldest is 25, then I have a 23-year-old, 21-year-old, and my youngest is 12. So, four
Were they all
kids.
with you? Were they all with you for the trip in earlier it, last year?
Yeah, it was me and my girls, actually. Like I said, my husband had his businesses, so they were here busy with the summer. It was during the summer, so it was me and my girls that traveled over there. But my whole family, like my parents and my brothers and everybody from here, went home to attend the wedding. So it was kind of like a family reunion. So it was nice to kind of see everybody.
Yeah, because you also mentioned, you know, your kids being exposed to, you know, basically Jim Crow like conditions, you know, violent control, you know, not being able to go particular places, or, you know, as you mentioned, having to maybe take a different bus, take a different route. It must hit, you know, when you're in your 20s and you have a full sort of grasp. You know, you're an adult, you're a free adult in the United States. And then to experience that, it must be quite a it must be quite a shock to your senses.
You know, it was really important. I know you living in the US, my parents were very adamant about keeping our culture and like maintaining our ties to our land and our country and our religion. So I feel like I've started that as well. And I think that's what keeps Palestinian roots strong, because I think, you know, if you ask anybody in Palestinian in anywhere in the world, they will keep on teaching their future generation of children the history of Palestine, the roots. So for us to travel there, it's really important for my kids to know where the roots are. So even though it's uncomfortable to be there, it's scary, but I think they have to see it and they have to understand what's really going on there, and to keep resisting in the fight and continue it way past after we're gone. But seeing it there and driving by the separation wall, it's definitely something that they'll never forget. And you know, it's something that it shakes you every time you see it. And seeing people, the resilience of the Palestinians, you know, they'll keep on living, they'll keep on thriving no matter what obstacle they'll put in there, you know, in front of them. So it's inspiring for my kids and even my husband's family. They live in a different town. And you know, just driving basically from town to town to meet family that's just down the road takes you hours, because you have to take separate roads and go through all these dirt roads just to get to these towns. Although there's a direct street that's paved, and but you're not allowed to be on that street because it's only for Israelis, and it's surrounded by federal settlements that have to be protected and with checkpoints. And so it was definitely an experience, but something that I hope will stay with them and hopefully will help them grow for sure.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, and you know, again, it's just kind of hard to put into words sometimes. There has been both here, as we're talking about it, just here in Delaware, and sort of in other places, a massive awakening. I know that a lot of times people will say, you know, these are outside people. I mean, you are all local people. We're all neighbors, you know, basically, trying to raise awareness about something that we are all complicit in. It couldn't have been more clear going to Dover Air Force Base and explaining, you know, what the situation is. It couldn't be more clear saying that, you know, two of the biggest Zionists in the country, maybe in the world, well, outside of maybe the Middle East and Palestine, but are Joe Biden and Chris Coons, and they're right here, you know. So we are complicit. So we are taking responsibility in the way that you guys went and did on Saturday, and that we'll continue to do. So I just think it's fantastic. But it's also very, very scary. I don't know. I know as a physician, doc, you must be. Physicians and people who have done work, especially in Gaza, have had a real special sort of role in this movement, to really sort of have to talk about the worst parts of it, the death. The disease, malnutrition, you know, pregnant women who are having all sorts of problems, dying, babies dying of starvation, all of this, just the most ugly, the ugliest stuff that we can produce really. And I also appreciate what physicians have done, both going there and drawing attention to this. I read a letter that a bunch of physicians who had, I think all American physicians who had gone to Gaza and worked, had published a letter. And it's very, very powerful to understand exactly the kind of atrocities that are happening while people ignore them, and while we pay for them and then ignore them. So it's sort of it's a sick cycle that I think we're in the middle of breaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as a doctor, and most people that go into healthcare are kind of like-minded, and in a way that they want to help humanity.
Well, doc,
It's
I want to correct you. Some doctors, because some are genocidal.
yeah,
yes.
some are
Yeah,
radical.
well, that's kind of where I was going. You know, it's like, for the most part, we are like that. But then, yeah, there are some that are still like hold on to ideologies like Zionism, which is wild to me. For someone having like similar training and education that I've had to still believe something like that is absolutely wild to me. But anyway, hearing the stories of like these doctors and other healthcare workers that have been in Palestine have been absolutely devastating. And before medical school and during medical school, I have done some trips abroad and done like some work that's similar to what these folks are doing over there, but it's just way, way worse over there. The things that they have to deal with, they can't even move around in just regular like scrubs because they are targeted by IOF soldiers. And with the IOF like specifically targeting hospitals and healthcare centers, and also there's no supplies and there's no food, so it's just a very, very dire situation. One of the things I was trying to point out in my speech and was a story I read recently of one of the accounts of one of the doctors that were over there, and he's saying that the starvation part of it is actually a bigger part than people really realize, because what's happening is people are getting injured from the bombings and the shootings and whatnot. And they come in, they get patched up in whichever way they can, but they still need to heal, but they need to eat, so in order for their bodies to heal, but they can't eat because there's not enough food, so they get infected. And so they a lot of times have to go through rounds of surgery and wound debridement and whatnot. But if they try to feed them a bit more, they start to heal a bit better. But it's hard to sustain that because there's hardly any food coming in. So like these people are just kind of in this constant cycle of getting infected and trying to heal wounds that are keep getting infected because they can't eat, essentially.
Yeah, the knock-on effects of this, and again, let's make no mistake, this is a perfect time to say it, because one of the things that should always be noted is that at the beginning of this phase, you know, I was still getting in arguments with people who would say, well, the IDF would not, well, they wouldn't purposely bomb a hospital. Well, they will. They're blowing up hospitals and schools. And the other point that you made that many of the doctors are making is that they're actively preventing foodstuffs, medicine, and other supplies to get in and such a rate that would actually allow people to live. You know, kids are dying because there's no there's they don't have the proper, they don't even have proper water. So if they had formula, they don't have clean water. So yeah, it's a by design genocidal tactic. It's really not up for discussion anymore. And I think it, all of those sort of steps are important to sort of lay out to people that this is sort of, you know, this is not going to be acceptable. You know, people are not going to stop. They're not going to stop fighting back in whatever, you know, way they can. And that part of it has been has at least given me some hope, because I've actually never seen this level of support for this cause before. I always draw the parallel to South Africa and apartheid because I grew up with it and was against it and saw it fall. And so I know that it can happen no matter how bad it is, you know, it with a concerted effort. It can happen. So I thank everybody for joining and sticking with this cause. I just want to give anybody, does anybody have any other sort of insight or stories about whether it is from Saturday in Dover or another action that that you'd like to share?
I was just gonna hop in and say I wanted to also just bring attention to the messaging of Saturday as well, in addition to just bringing awareness that weapon shipments were coming out of the Dover Air Force Base. Delawareans are demanding that stop. We don't want weapon shipments coming out of the Dover Air Force Base and going to a settler colony that is murdering entire family trees, period. I love the support, love seeing it, but we need material action. And there is an actual, there are several genocides going on. Okay. What we are witnessing is something no human being on earth should ever be able to experience nor witness. We're in the digital age where we're witnessing an entire genocide in front of our eyes in 4K every single day. And we're having, and these politicians and State Department spokespeople like the devil, Matt Miller, come out and they lie and they lie and they lie because of the stronghold that AIPAC and the entire settler colony located in West Asia has on this country and us, the citizens. Why is it that we don't have money to take care of people who are suffering from the environmental disasters such as the hurricane that hit the Carolinas, the hurricane that's about to hit Florida? Why don't we have that same, why is it that we can't spend billions of dollars on us, on our communities here? That's something we kept saying in our chants throughout the entire year. We were like, money for jobs and education, not for war and occupation. because it's very simple to understand. And all of this is very simple to understand. And you know what? The complications arise. The complications, there are no complications. There's no complexity to this in any way, shape, or form. It's just a chosen, something chosen by the adversaries here, that they use our money against our will for destruction. And as much as everyone loves to say that this, as the election is coming up, and I want to make this clear, as much as everyone loves to say that genocide is a single voter issue, that is the biggest lie on earth. Because genocide is everything. Genocide is everything. It overlaps into every single realm of life. And the fact that they think that us spending all, having our money, again, fund these genocides, be given to these weapons manufacturers, etc., is not doing damage for their children and their families here is a lie. Because right now, as you can see, climate change is at its peak. And we are encouraging global climate catastrophe at levels unseen before. We are destroying the planet in every way possible. And I just want that, and it's hitting the front, the back doors right now, our backyard, all of these hurricanes and where they're hitting, mountainous areas, places that you never even thought of. You know, I was just in, Tunisia, not so long ago, and there was a tornado. So I just want to say that everything is interconnected. All of our struggles are interconnected. And the people here are not getting any benefit from all of these weapons that are being sent there with their hard-earned money that they slave away for in this country. Just letting you all, just wanted to put that out there and say no more weapon shipments. No more weapon shipments from Dover. No more. We need to focus on community care in this country.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. I know from an electoral standpoint, I don't tell anybody how they should vote, just like I don't tell anybody how they should resist violent apartheid. I think that holding your moral ground, understanding that all of this stuff is connected, understanding that it's really actually, a trade-off between, whether we're going to spend money to prop up a settler colonial project, a white European racist project, or we're going to do something, here. I think that's perfectly fair, and people are going to have to learn to live with it, So the Democratic Party is just as complicit as the Republican Party, and if people don't start getting on board, that we're gonna have political issues here too, and that's just how it's gonna have to be, because this is just completely unacceptable. There's no question about it. And you also brought up a very interesting point that I also continue to harp on. That's one of my sort of go-to phrases. It's actually not complicated. If you think it's complicated, or you think we don't know what we're talking about, I would be happy to provide you with the syllabus. I'll sit with you. It should only take a half hour, an hour, to sort of explain the generalities of, sort of the last 100 years, and we can do that. But it's not fucking complicated. It's a project to exterminate people in a piece of land that. Basically what Europeans want to conquer. We've seen, it's one of the easiest historical things to explain to anybody. So yeah, I'm glad that you put it in those terms, because I think that's exactly the kind of terms that needs to be put in. Very clear, very honest, very just, you're not gonna cloudy the waters with bullshit, I think was what was said at the State Department the other day. No more bullshit. This is what we're gonna have to sort of move forward on this in that way. So
does anyone else have anything else to say, like Sikna Samahir?
Yeah, I'd like to say, here in Delaware, our politicians are extremely cowardly on this issue in particular, and it's really disgusting. And yeah, I just want to say I'm not voting for Sarah McBride unless she says something about this. She's
Yeah,
been
well,
extremely cowardly about this.
yeah, I don't
And
believe she'll say anything, actually.
I would love for her to prove me wrong, but I agree with you. And you asked about future actions. I do want to plug, we are DE Actions, the number 4, Palestine on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And if people are interested in, helping us organize our next action, they can DM us to get involved.
Yeah, anybody listening to this who is interested, I can tell you it's a great group of people. I've been out numerous times, with different groups in different sizes. From 8 people going to going to tell Senator Coons what we think standing on a sidewalk, to hundreds and hundreds of people walking to Joe Biden's house through the neighborhood there. But yeah, make your voices heard and have tough conversations, because I'm not voting for Sarah McBride. I'm not voting for Lisa Blunt Rochester. I'm not voting for anybody who doesn't want to make a comment on this. Even and I think my our great friend Medina has said too, like, at some point, whether you're a state official, a county official, you're gonna have to make a comment on it and take a stand on it, because, as you said very aptly, all of these struggles are connected. This is our tax money, people that we know, an Air Force base on our in our state, elected officials from our state. So yeah, I mean, th this runs very deep, and we're not. People are not going to be able to ignore it any longer. So, thank you, Wayne, for the plug, and we'll definitely add it to the show notes of this. So if anybody sees it, we'll be able to click and track back, and get in touch. Sikna, Samantha, Doc, Wayne, thank you so much. Dunya, thank you so much for helping me organize this, even if you haven't, if you didn't, even if you weren't, you didn't want to steal valor and say you were an organizer for the Dover Action. You helped me organize this, so you get kudos for that. So thank you very much. And I have a feeling I'll be seeing some of you out there in the street very soon.
Thank you very much, and thank you for giving us a platform to always speak and bring this, bringing as much attention as we can to everything that's going on in this crazy world.
Yeah, for
Thank you.
sure. You're more than welcome. I forget who I said it to, but this particular group, for some reason, really the commitment and the clarity of thought, the way that things are organized and people are organized and people are treated, really is inspiring to me. I was really waiting for some. It was one of those things where I felt like I was waiting for something like this to happen. Unfortunately, it had to happen with something that's so brutal and so sick. But I really feel like this is a turning point, and we're gonna things are turning poorly too, as we discussed at the with Lebanon. But I think this is a real. This is a hinge point, and I think we're going to get a good result in our lifetime. And I never thought that before. I'm getting a little older, so I'd like to see it before I check it out. So, thanks once again, everyone. Follow this stuff in the call. We're going to have more on it as time goes on, because we're not giving up. We're going to keep pushing until Palestine is free from the river to the sea. Thanks again, everyone. Left is best.